and welcome to my hearth. Now, the last few episodes we've been looking at the comedy of failure from Commedia dell'arte and noticing why we find it funny. Today we're going to have a little consideration of one of the main ways that writers use to create characters, and that is overhearing things and observing things. There's a lovely story about Maggie Smith when she was at the National Theatre, going to the cafeteria and noticing the two ladies who worked behind the counter. I'm going to call them Rose and Daphne. Daphne was one of those wonderful catering people who are full of energy, garrulous, telling stories, jollying everybody along, and just generally being full of bonhomie. Rose was very quiet and was in the shadow of Daphne, stayed in the background, just got on with her job, was rather meek and timid. I think it was Edward Petherbridge who was in the queue with Maggie Smith and remarked to her that wasn't Daphne a fantastic person, to which Maggie Smith replied, yes, but Rose is a much better part to play. She'd done that classic thing of the observer, of recognising that there were many waters in Rose that needed to be plumbed, many depths that needed to be investigated. It's interesting, and I've said this before, that as human beings, we are endlessly fascinated by the observation of other human beings. I love the fact that it's a kind of literary science. Gerald Durrell, in his book My Family and Other Animals, uses his family as the basis of his scientific observation. I did that from when I was very little, although I didn't realise I was doing it. On my mother's side, I had an enormous family. My grandma was one of 13, and my grandfather was one of 7, and they'd all had families. Some of my grandma's lot were very prolific, and I think one of my great-aunts had 10 children. Even in my 30s, I was still being introduced to people who were my close relatives, but just I'd never met them before. Keswick in Cumbria is quite a small town. I think at the time I was spending a lot of my time there, there were only about 4,500 people, of which I could have been related to about 100 of them. Whenever we went out shopping, we were always stopping to have a few words with a relative. What was great about my family was that they all had very strong eccentricities in a kind of Roald Dahl way. It made you want to look out for the normal one, to see one that really created a contrast with the more eccentric other relatives. They were very difficult to find. They were such a fantastic mixture of different origins. Irish, Geordie, Cumbrian. It was a heady mix of both language and intention. When I was little, we always had open fires and you needed it in the cold weather. I remember one of my great aunts, each time she came into the house, she would go up to the fireplace and hitch her skirt up to warm her ample lower proportions. She would then hop on one leg and twiddle her other leg below the knee like a can-can dancer and sing, "Ain't it a pity I've only one titty to feed the baby with?" Even at my young age, I realised that this was not usual or normal behaviour. However, she did it because she knew it made me laugh. And that was one of the great things about all of my relatives. They just wanted to laugh. My delicious Auntie Hilary would sometimes laugh so much that she burst into tears, and the tears would stream down her face with laughter. And the more she laughed, the more she couldn't stop herself laughing. My whole childhood was punctuated with laughter. Every time people came in, they had a story to tell. And I noticed the stories and stored them up. They had a great capacity to laugh at the misfortunes of both themselves and other people. And like the stories of the ancient Greeks, individuals became defined by the tragedies that had befallen them. People would punctuate their storytelling by saying something like, "You know who that is. That's the lady who got her breast caught in the mangle on washing day." That became that particular village's nom de plume. It became her calling card. I completely understood when I read the works of Alan Bennett or saw them on television where he was coming from, because I could always think, yeah, I know someone exactly like that. And I admired his observation because it was so similar to mine. Everyone that was talked about in the house was often referred to with a kind of nickname that was based on a commedia dell'arte failure. And the observation that people had was extreme. Everything was noticed, everything was retold, and retold again. And of course, that really was amplified by the fact that at that time, everybody talked. For the entire day, you were meeting people and talking to them. Perhaps they'd come to the house. Because of where my grandma lived, right in the very centre of Keswick, everybody that visited came there and were given a cup of tea and something to eat. My mother always said it was like a permanent cafe going on. You just cleared away one meal when somebody else turned up. The milk arrived on the doorstep in the morning, and I used to go out to the local baker and buy lots of loaves of bread, but they were all gone by the next day. It was a day punctuated by visitors and meals. Sometimes people brought the meal with them. It might be a pie from the baker, or it might be meat, or it might be whatever it was. But it was handed in to my mum and grandma, and it was expected that they would then return with its edible cousin. If anybody had a particular quirk or foible, especially if it was to do with language, they would then be defined by that in the way that you spoke about them. And you had to be really careful that you didn't do it in front of children who would then repeat it to that person. As I say, the whole town was so interconnected that people knew what you'd done before you did it. When I was going to go to university, which caused a great amount of concern and confusion and worry in the family, I was asked where I was going to go. They had got used to me not being around because I'd been at boarding school in Essex, and so I'd only gone to Keswick when the holiday was long enough for me to be able to do that. I know that it seems particularly inappropriate at the moment when we're having such trouble with the trains, but when I was little, or rather really until even when I went to university, the trains were so efficient that you could sort your life out using them. The Lakes Express from London Euston to Keswick was still steam, and it took a very long while to get there. I've a feeling, I may be wrong here, but I've a feeling that it was about 8 hours. It stopped at many stations on the way, but it left London Euston and it terminated in Keswick. There was always someone there to meet me, which was great. When I was little, a porter would meet me off the train and take my luggage to the underground station. In fact, in one case, went with me all the way round to Fenchurch Street, where I then caught the train to school. It felt like one of those school stories that I talked about in a previous episode. I had my own Hogwarts Express. And of course, everybody on the train in your compartment talked to you. This was a different age. When I was little, adults would look after me, as it were, in the carriage. I was particularly small for my age. I wasn't actually 5 foot until I was about 15 or 16. But they were marvellous places, the trains, to observe other people. I find myself still doing it, especially when I'm on the underground. It's such an incredible collection of people that you will never see again, but you notice things about them. This quality of being able to overhear and observe people was obviously in my family. My Uncle Brian, who was an amazingly funny man, was an incredible impersonator, to such an extent that he would appear occasionally on Radio Cumbria and perform in a kind of Mike Yarwood way at the time, and he was very successful. And all of my uncles used to do that as well. My Uncle Malcolm overheard one of the Cumbrian farmers say, "How is ta, as a ganyan? Dis ta see that gadgie ganning into Monarch's Cuttle for a bevy?" How are you? How are you doing? Did you see that man, gadgie, going into the King's Head, Monarch's Cuttle, for a bevy, for a drink? And each time they observed and overheard, they delighted in bringing back the trophies of their hunting expedition to us in the house. I was never aware of how strong their accents were, how fast they talked, and how much they shared their observations. But I do remember when I was playing Oliver Hardy for Pocket Theatre Cumbria, I took my Stan Laurel, the lovely Alistair, back to my family's house for tea. And he sat there, unusually quiet for him, observing and overhearing everything that was going on. And afterwards he said to me, "Your family are absolutely lovely, and I really like them, but I couldn't understand a single word they said." And there I've done an overheard and observed thing with him. Anyway, more of this next time.